Again, today we have next Technology Vision session, which is a part of Technology Excellence Initiative. We are going to talk with Sam Riemann, who is, you see this nice picture on the right side. This is actually his real picture.
That's before I save.
I guess this is when you left EPAM, but before you returned back to EPAM, right?
That's right. In fact, okay. Every morning before I shave, this is what I look like.
Okay, cool. So actually, once again, I mentioned this before Sam, you joined. Sam was CTO of EPAM Systems like a few years ago. Then he left company and was specializing in security and then returned back and again picked up this domain in our company. And we're going to talk about security today, right? My name is
yes.
Dmitry. Yeah, I'm the solution architect, and I'm going to, you know, moderate this session. Folks, feel free to share your comments, your questions in chat. We will pick them up. If there will be a bunch of questions, we'll just have another session to address them, if any, like we did this exactly with Alex Agizim. And we're going to start with this slide just to explain things related to some basics in security and market, right? So Sam, would you like to comment this slide? This is your one.
Sure. I think, in fact, I'll go through the number first, and then I'll tell you a bit about why I'm so excited. But thanks for the intro, Dima. Very nice to be on with everybody today. If there is any way that we can make this interactive, I would love to, like maybe post your questions that I could see it. But what it comes down to is, so I've actually been in security for 30 years, over 30 years. My first company that I sold to Borland, together with my brother, was a compiler company. But it was actually very much the reason why we were in a program called Shroud C program or competition was because even back then, most of what we're trying to do was around integrity and confidentiality, which is, you know, and I'm doing show and tell, which is like a device like this. This is 1993, 94, has a touch screen, has a keyboard. Is one of the first wireless encrypted devices on a CDPD, you know, wireless modem. And then there are devices like these, which a lot of you guys bought with Palm Pilot, if you're old enough to remember, this is a CDPD modem that has encryption on it. We did a lot of the, we wire wrapped these things. I mean, this was, you know, or this one we built from scratch called NewsPager. And that was what I sold to Motorola as a company in 96. So I have a long history of cryptography. A third of my patents are actually on cryptography and key exchange. I've always felt that security was a big part of engineering. In fact, I was puzzled to see how people think of security outside of engineering. And I could never understand it. It's almost like talking about software engineering without distributed computing back then. What does that even mean to some degree? So, And went back and forth. SyncUp was another baby that I did, was on PKI exchange systems, and then ArcSan, Dima, you mentioned, which is a DoD, Department of Defense funded research in white box cryptography, and so on. So and my as I start to get older, I start to feel that security has become really at the tipping point. I was telling somebody yesterday. In fact, I was on North America BU. Meeting yesterday, and I was presenting some data as well. We now have passed the point that cyber crime retail value is twice as much as all the other transactional crime, which includes counterfeiting, includes drug trafficking, human trafficking. You add all them together, what's roughly about $2.2 trillion. Cyber crime retail value now in 2020 is roughly about $5 trillion. And so if you look at it, you can't say this is not a serious problem. And all of us here as technologists, obviously, I'm sure you feel it. They said, okay, sure. So we have something to do about this. We could do a lot more about this. And this is why, honestly, this time coming back, I'm focusing on a very specific area, which is security. And that's the background. But here is some data that you could look at. If you look at this chart, I plotted this chart from data from Poneman and IBM. So if you want the original, you know, data set, I could more than happy to send it to you. But if you go to Poneman, they provide this data every year In fact, the first year that we did this was funded by RxSan and IBM together, but now they're doing it every year. And so the cost per, the y-axis there, cost per attack, which means how much would a company pay to prevent, recover, remediate, you know, from remediate and you know, from an attack per incident, SLE. So a single loss expectancy, that's what that is. On the x-axis, you have the frequency of attack, which is how often they're actually detecting. And these are like more like the ARO across the whole organization. When you look at the upper right, that's obviously the most often and most expensive one to fix, compromised credential. And that's why we work on IAM so much, identity access management so much. Application vulnerabilities, that's exactly our sweet spot. That's where we're at. So, you know, we build applications for some of the great clients. And then cloud configuration. In this case, configuration, as you all know, cloud is not just configuration. It's much more dynamically. How do you set up your SDN? How do you set up your nodes and so on? And so that part is also code as well. I would debate that social engineering should be farther towards the right. I think the frequency is a lot higher. The problem, honestly, is their data was validated data. So it's very hard to validate social, right? So because most of the time, when people use social engineering on people, they don't even know that. So how would they attest to it? So I think, but this is actually a very good data set. There's some more data on the lower left. Those are more like shock value, if you will, but still, it's important to see. I think the top one, 75% of Fortune 500 has confirmed breaches. And this is just confirmed breaches, right? So it's no longer a what if, it's when type of problem. And I don't know if anybody have any interest in talk more about this, but maybe we can go to the next slide as well, Dima.
So actually, next one is about topics that we would like to discuss, right? So here we go.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So first one is cloud security, right? And
maybe before we go there, can I ask for a puzzle? Can I ask for maybe just have a quick game and see if anybody knows what this is? Can anybody
how are we going to do it?
Can they type on a chat, or do they have no way to type on chat? If anybody has any way to type on chat, if you guys know what this is, just raise your hand. Oh, you could. Okay, they can chat. So
it's something similar to Enigma, right, or what?
Yeah, close enough. It was actually used as a CISA cipher. That's what it is. It's a cipher key and decoder. So basically, it was actually used for. In fact, even just a few years ago in South America, military was still they were still using. This one is actually from Mexico. That was actually marked for their military. And so
is it something that we sell to our customers?
No, we don't sell it to our customers. This is actually military surplus. I have a whole collection of them. But it's interesting because we always thought that, you know, security is the secret stuff and it's never reachable. It's actually sometimes as concrete as this. It's as concrete as your lock, as concrete as, you know, as the way that you walk around the street, you check your corners, you make sure that it's actually much more of an attitude. And so I just, you know, show that because I think people find security as something that they don't touch, they don't see. In fact, you see that every day, every time you go through a lock. At some point in time, if you get interested, I'd be more than happy to talk about a lock construction and how locks were made, and maybe you know this already. But if you look at how locks are constructed, it's actually got layer in defense. It's actually got physical aspect plus the whole aspects of relevancy, which is what we use in cryptography, aligned with it. So, but let's talk about the topic, as you said, Dima, cloud security. These are all the top ones. And again, security, one of the beauty of it is it goes from soup to nuts, really, from one side to the other side. You could go as low level as you want to on a hardware level, and even on a physical level, on people's level, you could go as high level as you want, right? And so, but these are the topics that I'm hearing from customers that we are working on, my team is continuously working on, and I do want to raise that attention to everybody. Cloud security, what does that really mean? So, well, years ago, cloud security doesn't mean anything. Years ago, people just put whatever they have it on-prem, and they put it in a cloud and assume that works. That's actually a fairly bad model, because if you look at, forget about everything else, just the fact that how much the cloud platform has access to put another layer on top of it could easily be broken by a hypervisor, could easily be broken by the cloud provider. And so they realized that, I think the cloud provider realized that either they would fight them or they join them. And so they decided to join the security folks and start providing a lot of the security functionality, which is, instead of people just saying, no, cloud would never be safe because, you know, ultimately they can virtualize and be able to see everything inside the tenants, as opposed to doing that, they basically say, you know what, how about we build cloud security into it? And this is where Amazon and especially Azure, you know, kudos to Microsoft, did an amazing job on putting a lot of the security function, which is mostly on setting up technical controls, aligning it with policies, allowing instrumentation and detection of valuable, you know, events, and then pulling it back together into a system that potentially could be, you know, either automated or at least flowed up to endless to detect and remediate it. And if you look at primarily most of those technical control that could be done right now, it's still about on par as on-prem. But we're seeing a trend where the cloud security now, because of how much they can see, and because everything is software defined, it's SDN this, SDN that, so much more of it could now be done with the cloud. So not only are we at a point that we're shifting, we used to say cloud is not going to be secure, cloud's not going to be safe. We're actually at a point now that we're saying, no, we kind of know what we need to do to some degree. There's still some issues. So for example, I'll name a couple of things. If you use container, GRSec is your friend, right? If you use container, and relying on cross symbols is not a good thing to do. So that's where GRSec would come in. That model is no longer just a conversation, but it's real. It's here today. If you have concern about visibility, about confidentiality, SGX or any kind of secure enclave is your friend. That was, I still remember when Intel came to me about 10 years ago and asked for analysis of it. I still remember that back then I was joking. I was like, come on, seriously, SGX on an Intel platform, it's not going to fly. Nobody's going to comply to it. And it's an assertion-based enclave, which makes it very difficult to use, but very secure. Now we're seeing Stone, we're seeing integration, we're seeing good implementation of it. So it's becoming real. So we're at a tipping point where not only are the customers and engineers, I think now, are familiar with the fact that cloud is potentially not there yet, potentially could actually provide more controls and access to things that security experts would need. Now, I'm not saying the cloud is more secure, okay? That's not what I'm saying, because cloud present a level of dynamism that is not there in on-prem. And for that reason, the complexity is higher. That's why the bar for cloud should also be higher. But now we're starting to see a lot more control over on it. For example, if you want to do any kind of network detection, now there is VTAP and vSPAN, makes it much easier. Now you could basically have things like micro-segmentation, but still be able to monitor it cross segments. You couldn't do that before. Or on-prem solution, you have to stick with either Cisco or Juniper and make that a very, you know, specific project. Now there's a standard to do that. So I think we're moving in absolutely in the right direction. I think we're on a cloud side. But on a cloud side, primarily, most of the ask, most of the need is around an IAM, identity management. So, you know, if you're interested in it, study, especially a lot of people are going two levels. They have cloud native, which is, you know, Azure would be Azure AD and so on. But they're all, you know, somehow coupled with OAuth 2.0, obviously. But on top of that, they also have either some kind of lifecycle management type of engine or some kind of abstraction layer like Okta or Ping that puts on top of it so they can type multiple cloud in. But that's IAM. IAM is a big topic because everybody realized identity is where the source of the issue is, which I tend to agree most of the time, at least in the market right now. That's why unifying customer identity, unifying employee identity, unifying, you know, partners identity is such a critical thing. You see a lot of work there. Cloud, you also see a lot of work on securing the actual workload. So how do we actually secure the workload? I mentioned GRSec, I mentioned about Scone. Those are things that secure the actual runtime and workload. And obviously there is the encryption for the data side. How do you actually do single encryption? How do you manage your key? How do you segment your key? Everybody says, yeah, put the key inside a KMS. That's an easy answer, please do it. But at the same time, it's much more complicated than that. So what do you do in that case? How do you generate, rotate all these different keys and not expose to our key, not expose to our root key, but use the D key, the data key most of the time and still be able to rotate them? Those are all tough areas, but it's an area of interest. API security is really big. You hear that a lot, but it's tied to cloud as well. And then on top of all of that is really how to architect a secure cloud. That's not a very simple topic. It's easy to say, well, you got virtual private cloud. You slap a virtual private cloud and say, that's the old ring fencing model that basically we understand now that it's not scalable and it's not dynamic. So yes, you still need a virtual private cloud. You still need some kind of perimeter ring fence your clusters, but how do you break them down in microseconds? How do you break them down so that you can actually use, you know, some level of abstraction, both tied to the network and also with the payload? So cloud security is a very interesting area. Anyway, I could talk forever about it, but I'll pause a little bit because otherwise I end up talking about one topic for all of the things.
Yeah. At the same time, still you mentioned that like architect cloud, secure cloud solutions, but I believe that actually it will be layered stuff. You need to address architecture not all in architecture design. You need then address it during development. You need then address it during deployment on the level of system architects or system engineers who will deal with the infrastructure and should configure it, right? Then you should address it on the process levels. Right, because key rotation and reaction on incidents and audit of logs and so on and so forth. So, do you think architects should take care about pinpointing all these things, or how to make this complex security together? What is the approach?
That's a very good question, Dima. So, I would actually say look at your. In fact, I had a customer ask me that question just recently. So. I would actually say, look at it from a framework perspective. You know me, I'm very hands-on, but in this case, I would say really use the framework. For example, I think the architect would be important, but the architect itself cannot do all of this. I completely agree with you. There is an aspect of, you know, obviously DevOps would be a big part of it. But if you look at it from a framework perspective, which is you identify, you protect, and so on, this is in this framework that I'm talking about. But you first and foremost, you have to identify what you care about inside a piece of software. I'm getting fairly direct and deep now, but cut me off if this is more too technical. You have to identify what you care about. If you don't know what you care about, you can't protect it. So identification and classification is a very important thing. Always start with that. That is a job of architect, product managers, product owners, the engineering team. The whole team should work together to understand what is classified as what. For example, you know, keys that we talked about are always sensitive information that should always be, you know, at least, you know, if not your top security, like top levels of classification. But then you also have asset that potentially, you know, could be stolen. If it's stolen, that would hurt the company. Or if it's modified, that could hurt the company. Or if it's encrypted, like ransomware, for example, that could hurt the company. So imagine you have a piece of code that relies on a set of data that owns an overnight, you can't access it anymore, looks like corrupted data, and you realize that a piece of malware actually encrypted it, and you won't decrypt it unless you pay them so-and-so. That's what typical ransomware looks like these days. So there are all kinds of different routes that you have to worry about on different level of classified information, but that's your asset. And then the rest of the system, you classify them. Once you understand what that is, then you build protection around it. The protection structure and architecture, the design of it, it's important. But as you pointed out, if you can put instrumentation on it, it's no good because it's not about secure and forget. No such thing anymore. You need to instrument around it. You need to make sure that there are ways that could be detect of what is relevant, what is irrelevant, what is normalcy, what is not. That's the key of it because outlying is basically the key of detecting for any abnormal activities. So you need to make sure that's part of how do you engineer it? Because everything else could be said, could be done perfectly. But if it's got a large set of vulnerability inside the application, you're still stuck because, you know, if I do a whole bunch of string, copy in it, I have a bunch of, you know, buffer overflow. I have a bunch of areas that have, you know, dynamic, you know, binding for my code. Looks really good, but that's a hacker's heaven. And so when you see that, no matter how many layers you put on top of it, ultimately you're designing a piece of code, you're writing a piece of code that could be easily taken advantage of. And I always tell people, hackers and electricity, they have one thing in common. They always travel through the least passive resistance. So if you become the weakest link, your code become the weakest link, I can guarantee you that's where they're going to find it. And that's where you're going to go to. So always raise the bar on a vulnerability side to make it as difficult as possible for them. But then there is also the execution, as you mentioned, about the actual, you know, motion part, which is, you know, the defend part, and it, and basically, how do you detect an incident? How do you actually then remediate? And then how do you recover to a normal state? Those are all aspects of it, but start with a framework, like a NIST framework, CSF framework. I could provide links, but one other idea is I always recommend using the CIS 20 controls. If you look at the CIS 20, it gives you all the way from asset identification to the best practices. So, and everybody could read it. It's very understandable. It's not a BS document. It's a very, very simple set of controls, and try to at least apply it to what you do. That's a very good way to start.
Okay, cool. So I propose to move forward. When we were preparing this deck, we have a bunch of actually areas and questions on next slides. I propose to probably speed up on this slide. Next trend that you listed is API security. So, like, how would you comment this area?
Sure. I kind of mentioned that a little bit on the cloud security, but API basically increase. It's a great thing. We all agree. But it also increases your attack surface. So, for example, when I'm a certified ethical hacker. So from my side, when I looked at a system, I do what I call, you know, I map it out, the recon. When I map it out, I basically look for things that would react to me, whether it is a ping, you know, a note with an operative reply, or it would give me a SYNC-ACK, or a note that would basically give me back an API, you know, say don't such API or port. Every single API is an entry point. So it's good to expose API, but just be very, very careful about securing your API, because every one of it is an entry point. I mentioned about identity already, but identity has become the new perimeter. Everybody's calling it, because everything that we worked on now is directly tied to a digital identity. And as long as that digital identity is valid, a lot of the security control would be valid in most cases, which is great. However, once that's compromised, you need to understand what is then further down the chain that could be compromised. So that's why identity management is so important. Unifying it is so important. All that said, zero trust architecture, please read up on it. What does that really mean? Well, we finally came to the realization that, you know, the network is no longer a solid network. When I plug in an RJ45 into the Ethernet, it's not really a physical wire anymore. It's not a physical connection. There are layers and layers and abstraction. So we can just assume that it typically in security, we go from trusted zone to trusted zone. All the old architecture relies on the same model, which is to go from trusted zone to trusted zone. Everything in between has to be encrypted. You only decrypt and encrypt within trusted zone, then you're fairly safe. And the rule is you never ever send keys anywhere between the trusted zones. That's almost like the gospel for, you know, for security. Problem with that is there's no such thing as trusted zone anymore. That's what zero trust architecture is really about on a high level. And then IoT at bot. So the level of compute power, everybody says data is the new currency. I hate to say that, but 10 years ago or 20 years ago, I said the same thing. Now, though, I say CPU power is the new currency. Whoever's got the highest level of CPU power is going to be the king, especially in security. If you have a lot of CPU power, look up Hajime, look up Mirai attacks, you will see what I mean. But basically, there's a lot of hijacking of CPU power happening right now. And this is why IoT is such a big topic, because IoT usually have lower level of power. They're, you know, least, you know, power consumption devices. And so to put serious security controls and techniques in it, it's very, very difficult. That's why they're a target for a lot of the situations. So IoT and botnet is a big topic that, you know, and the scale that would affect us going forward. ML and UABA. So, and then UABA is much more on the behavioral side, but the two, if you put together, we're now at a scale that we basically realize that it's almost impossible for our old way of detection and response to work at the scale and how dynamic and how agile our systems are. So using ML is not just a cool idea or fancy term or just marketing buzzwords. It's actually real because the attackers are using it, honestly, because the attackers are generating kits after kits with really good ML. I mentioned about recon and footprinting. They have ML engines and models that's trained for particular type of footprinting. So if we don't use it, we'd be falling behind. So as the good guys, we're defending against the bad guys. We have to make sure that we put enough of an assistant with ML to help with the expert. It's not about solving the whole problem. It's about reducing the amount of events so that our experts could focus where they need to focus on.
Okay, so we can say that these topics on the screen are top trending topics right now, right?
I would talk to almost every customer about security, and they would tell me one of these at least, or sometimes all of them.
Okay. So probably it will make sense to deep dive in some of them later. So folks, feel free to put your comments which topics you think will be interesting. Personally, I'm interested in zero trust architecture. Probably this can be integrated as one of the best practices for our architects community. I mean, like many flavors of architects, like software solution architects, system architects, and so on. Okay, so I propose to move forward. We have questions, probably let's start from the left side, regarding security practice in EPAM. I know a few other folks who work with you, but could you tell us in few words about the core team in this practice?
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I got an outstanding team. So you guys probably know Eugene. Eugene is my head of defensive security, and he runs all of my basically everything from cloud security on an IAM MDRS managed detection and response services. So that's one area that I have a core team on, and it's a very, very strong team. We're investing a lot of certification in that area as well, by the way. I have Adam Bishop, who runs a lot of my go-to-market, plus together with my offensive security, which is much more around pen testing, threat hunting, outside-in perspective, like research. That's where, you know, Adam has been helping me on. So that's one area. I have Boris, who heads up, and obviously I could send you names and you guys, you know, email so you guys would know them. But Boris heads up most of my GovSec, or right now we call it DRM, digital risk management, which is around governance, compliance, and risk management, IRM, ERM, and so on. All three of them come together and become the core security team. And you probably saw that yesterday day before, we have also made an announcement. We did our first acquisition in a cybersecurity space as well. And so I very, very happy, very proud that, you know, we added a team that has experience in MDRS, very strong MDRS experience, as well as lay of the land type of attack. And I can explain what lay of the land is. But so we're adding, you know, another very good group out of Israel, which is one of the strongest locations for security, by the way. So that's really the core team, which is the offensive, the defensive, the GovSec, and then as well as the new acquisition we have from White Hat Security.
Yeah. And so how many folks we have in security practice? Do you know?
So we're roughly about, if you include the acquisition as well, we're roughly about 400. So it's still a relatively small group. But every one of the people, all the team members, are security experts. So they're not just people who heard about it, but they actually worked on security, understand security, a different aspect of it. And over half of them have certification, multiple levels of certification. So it's pretty good.
And so when I talk to Kirill or to Eugene, so they're usually pretty overloaded. So do you need more folks in security practice? Are you interested to pick up other colleagues who want to join? If yes, then how they can join, who is the contact point, and so on?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm constantly, there was a question, by the way, Dima, at some point, maybe we could answer that question as well in a chat. But yes, we're absolutely looking for people. We're looking for people who's interested in security, who's curious about security. You don't have to be a security expert. If you've taken a few classes on security, that's great. If you've got some certification, like, you know, OSCP or EC Console type of certification, that's great. But we're looking for people who are, there are two camps of security, and we need both. People who are very good at understanding complex systems from a governance perspective, sure. Those are the CSIP and CSIM, we call it, which is much more around applying a set of controls over to a system. That would be a good skill set, but we still need some level of tech, because security is no longer just, you know, it's always fairly technical. So level of technology understanding and engineering level, it's required. But then there are also people who likes to do low-level programming. So like myself, if you enjoy low-level programming, it's a very good way to start. If you are curious about, you know, tinkering, which is you like to, like me, you like to break stuff and, you know, understand what's in it, that's a very, very good start. That's usually what great security experts are, which is they're very, very curious about technology, want to understand them. That's a very good start. Or if you just feel that it's an important topic, because I'll be very honest with you. I think security has a moral ground that's driving me towards what I do. I do think that we are protecting people's critical asset. And that's why if you just feel strongly about, hey, I want to be one of the good guys and actually help protect, you know, people's asset, help protect software, by all means, reach out to us. But the best way to do it is to reach out to Eugene, who runs the practice. Have him work with you and on a, you know, depending on level, architect level, reach out to me directly. I would love to talk to you myself on an architect level as well. But Eugene and I would be your touch points.
Cool. And you mentioned low level programming. I propose to probably ask a question from the right side of this slide, because it's like just good topic, I think. You can see that we would like to talk about trending tools, frameworks, technologies, blah, blah, blah. So when you mentioned low-level programming, what do you mean? What language? What is supposed to be done?
Well, C would be great. C, if you have assembly, that'd be great, but don't worry about it. So I'm more in a C and assembly level, but if you have C level, that'll be great. If you, but it really is not. So I'll start from there. So, you know, C, OS level, that would be ideal. That would be great. But don't let that scare you off. That's not always the case. And then if you move up a little bit, if you go, you know, if you know Java, or even if you know Python, that's good too. But it would be really good if you understand how Java works, not so much just knowing the API, which is, you know, a little bit of IL, for example, or bytecode, a little bit on that level would be very, very helpful. That's the kind, and you don't need to be an expert in it. You just need to be curious about it. That's all you need to be. So, but if you find yourself, what do you mean? I don't want to know, you know, what an atomic instruction is. I don't want to have to figure that part out. That's not what interests me. I purely want to do something that would expose a certain feature. That's what my interest is. Then that might not be the best fit for you. But if you have interest about how system works, that is a very good area for you to get in. Security is a very good area for you to get in.
Mm-hmm. And any
C level would be great, but if you have Java level, that would be great too. But at least, you know, you're curious about, you know, Spring Boot. So how does binding works? How does ASP work within Java? Java 8 with Lambda, how does that actually translate into bytecode or something like that? You're curious about it, then you look into it.
Mm-hmm. Any tools?
Oh, plenty. So depending on which side on the camp you are, I'll name a whole bunch of stuff on the security side first. But Nmap is your friend. Nmap is your best friend. If you play with Nmap, understand network, very good. If you've used anything like Metasploit, then you're expert level to some degree, great. If you on a more of the language side is much more around on the cloud side, it's much more around knowing the cloud SDKs like Azure Secure SDK, Security SDK, using tools like Okta, Ping. Those would be very, very useful. Those would be, you know, very helpful. If you have experience with firewalls, whether it's, you know, NSXT on the VMware side or much more just traditional FireEye type, that would be very helpful. Any kind of experience with WAF, CASB, I'm throwing buzzword out, I apologize, but, you know, web application firewall, if you can do like, you know, on a cloud brokerage side and CASBs, if you have experience with SIEM, that would be great, which is on the event side, like QRadars and so on. That would be really, really helpful. If you have experience on even just configuration, even on platform, so you know how Jamf works, you can install that and you understand how that actually ties to the system. You have VPN experience. That's very, very helpful. Those are all areas that we need.
Mm-hmm. And I have a question regarding frameworks. As far as I remember, Microsoft was pushing forward SDL, which stands for Security Development Lifecycle, and it was pretty promising. They had threat modeling and threat modeling tool, so they were pushing it forward. They were saying that they use it and it's successful. Is it still like in trends?
It absolutely is.
Anything else? Something else on top of it?
Well, no, I mean, there are tons and tons of tools. So I think I could share a whole list with you and maybe you could share with the team later on. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the problem, though, to be honest with you, which is if you look at security, if you look at my set of tools, so I have a page that I actually keep all my tools in. The page has, I think, 300-400 tools of commonly used tools. So it's a very large set. So I could share that with you. Maybe you could share with the team. But I would recommend that, you know, pick out a few high-level ones. As long as you have some understanding, I think that would be good. We also have a very strong training program. Eugene is building it out and continue to get it with our new acquisition. So don't be afraid to just try it out. Like I said, the attitude is far more important in this case, and your interest level is far more important than your experience.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so and a few comments, if we are finalizing with the right side of this slide, a few comments regarding security certifications that you believe must have.
Yes.
Something for basics.
Yeah.
What would you list?
Yeah, I'll start with the easier one. The easier ones are the Microsoft security training, the Cisco security trainings. Those are, you know, you get like a whole dozen of them, honestly. But go as much with the cloud ones as possible. That's the low-hanging fruit. You hear a lot about networking and security because traditionally that's the entry point, and that is still the entry point first and foremost. So you see a lot of the security training are network-related. That's a good start. That's a very, very good start. So go with the Microsoft and Cisco security training. If you have more time and more and by the way, you can come to the team, and then we also invest a lot on training trainers and internal training as well. But security training from OSCP group, and also from EC Council, also from Offensive Security. Well, so those are all the one that's very, very helpful in security. And then there are the ones that tied specifically to the cloud that I mentioned. So Google have their own, Amazon have their own. Go with the cloud ones. Those are the one that would actually give you practical experience, as opposed to the old days of, you know, yes, they know the difference between a symmetrical key and asymmetrical key. Good for you. It's very useful for me as an older guy, but modern, not so useful anymore.
Cool. And by the way, I dropped the link in the chat. We have created a faculty in Technology Solution University, which is our you probably know it as Solution Architecture University. It was extended.
Yes.
And we have four faculties there, and Eugene and Kirill and I guess other colleagues from security practice formed security faculty there. So guys, feel free to check it out as a part of wide BitTrack community initiative that we are pushing forward from CTO side. You can The idea is to let all BTrack engineers to join those faculties. So as one of options for you, you can pass trainings that you see on security faculty, which was created again by Sam and his colleagues. So feel free to check it out. Okay, probably it could be a good idea to have one more session regarding tools if you have time, and it will be interesting for our colleagues, because definitely we have things to discuss there. Let's return Sure. to the left side of our deck. I'm just trying, you know, to move forward back and forth, because we are switching to different topics. You mentioned all this list of tools. Do you have any pages in KB, something to read for our folks? If it's possible, it would be nice to have it in chat. Probably not now. Sure. We can drop it later. We can share it. So
yeah, I could send that to you later. But mm-hmm. our competency center page would be very, very helpful. Mm-hmm. I also have a number of decks. For example, you mentioned Dima that on the zero trust. I have a white paper that's coming out that is fairly detailed on what I think is zero trust architecture, and also a presentation on it. I also have a podcast that I host twice a month. So if you go to epam.com/cybersecurity, you see that I have a lot of material there. It's somewhere in the middle section that lists out all the podcasts, all the white paper. I would strongly recommend going there and checking it out.
Cool. I guess we can share this link as well, right, to podcasts. Next question is about, is it possible to estimate how many security-focused projects we did in 2020? And some the most cool or interesting cases, if you can, just short.
Yeah, it's hard for me to estimate how many, because it changes from... I worked on a dollar sign amount, so I keep my pipeline on the sales side on dollar sign amount much more on a project by project basis. But I can talk about some of the more more interesting one where let me see here. I actually have some data here. Bear with me for 1 second. But if you look at typically what those projects are, I could tell you roughly a lot of the projects were around. Basically, they're around all the topic that I described, which is a lot of them on cloud security. A lot of them were a customer moving to the cloud. They're transitioning over to the cloud, and they're looking for, let me look for my customer name, excuse me. A lot of them were looking for specific areas. Yeah, okay, here's the list. So a lot of them are looking for specific areas. So for example, and this is all internal, right? We don't have external people on a call. Yes, Dima, just want to make sure.
Yeah, we have okay. Only so, one audience here.
Perfect, okay. So for example, MBUSA, it's very exciting. We're helping them with application security and IAM-based type of work. That was a tough one, because in a sense it's good. Because you know it involves a lot of different areas, and security, there's very little is just about, okay, let's just work. It's usually about guiding them as well as working together. So you see a lot of the deals are, you know, they have a problem. They want to either move to the cloud. They know how to secure the system on-prem, but they don't know what to do on a cloud and type, you know, that type of conversation. And so there is research involved in every project. There is, you know, guidance and consulting in every project. And then there was actual working in every project. So Epic Games, you probably know it. What we do there is a lot of the application security, a lot of the GovSec governance that we do for them. And then we also do a lot of the SOC team, Secure Operations Center. So that's an area that we do quite a bit on for our clients. We're extending out to call it MDRS, because that's a new term of it, more proactive. Verizon was recent. Oh, sure. Yeah, be happy to. And so that's also in an area of application security, which is AppSec. We have other areas in SOC team as well. We're growing very fast in SOC team. Then we have more AppSec. For example, Walter Kluwer, in fact, we just got an award for them about the work that we do for them in the security side. And then SAP, which is much more around AppSec as well. So you see cloud, IAM, secure operation, API level security is also clumped together in that on a AppSec side. All of these projects requires at least architect level and engineering level people, sometimes higher level. Sometimes, I mean, for example, like myself, I consult, Eugene consult, Adam, Boris, they're all consult. But a lot of the times are, you know, they want to go towards a certain area. So for example, they want to move to the cloud. They want to know how to actually reduce the blast radius for the cloud, for their storage. Well, do you break them all up into small units and then put it in a master key bucket and encrypt each one of them separately and then put a separate key? Where do you store the key? How do you, you know, manage it? And then it, and when something goes wrong, when you have to transport that information somewhere else, do you transport with the key or what do you do? And so a lot of that type of problem, it's not known yet. It's not like I can Google for it. There was no such thing that you could just look for it and say, yeah, there's the answer out there. That's why it makes it very interesting. But those are some of the high level projects. But I could tell you one thing though, it's amazing because when I first, and you know that, but I'm very, very active on the sales side. I push very hard on the sales side because I believe if we sell something right, then the engineers would have a chance to work on something right. I feel personally responsible every time there's a deal that we close. So I can't always promise that we close the right deals or the best deals, but we always try. We try the best we can so that when we see something, if the customer is asking for, you know, well, can you find somebody who can scan all those reports and then generate a report out of it? I would think very hard to say, no, that's not the type of work. But if the customer says, you know, I have some really critical set of data, I don't know how to protect them, and we're moving it from one environment to another environment, what can we do? That's the kind of project that I really want to work on. Are there more mundane projects? Of course there are. But at the core of it is, I think security is a very active, proactive approach, no matter how you look at it. So architects would start. Engineers, we need critical engineers, especially network security, cloud engineers. Those are great. And people with different kinds of skill set to rotate as an SME are very, very helpful. All those things are extremely useful. And we're also expanding out very quickly our SOC and MDRS type of offering. So if you have experience with SIM, which is, you know, security event and incident management type of platform, that would be very, very useful.
So before switch to questions, final question, questions in chat, final question regarding White Hat. So just in short, I guess we were trying to cover some gaps, right? Or what was the reason? And so could you comment this deal?
Sorry, William, could you repeat that again? I'm just answering one question on chat.
Yeah, I'm trying to ask regarding buying White Hat. So probably you folks know that EPAM bought White Hat, which is a company that is specialized in security. So just a few comments regarding why we need it. So it was extending some of our capabilities. It was covering some gaps. So what was the reason?
Yeah, good point. So I'm super excited. I've worked really hard to do this. So One of the key aspects is security is such a wide space. I have a landscape. I have a roadmap that I've designed in areas that I need to plan to be very strong. So I have another presentation at some point in time, if you guys want to see it, but it's the same presentation that, you know, Ark and I, we had long conversations about even before I joined, about how I think that security is the next pillar. Together with Agile was a pillar, and now we don't talk about it anymore, but Agile really was a pillar. Cloud was a pillar. Modular, you know, and modern engineering coding technique is a pillar. I think security is a pillar of that because nobody wants to use anything that they can't get their hands on. That's why mobile and cloud is so important. It's about access. It's about scale. Nobody wants to use something that's old. That's why Agile is so important because it gives you that, you know, micro piece of innovation and also that adaptability. Everybody likes everything to be beautiful. That's why user experience is so critical. But everybody needs to rely on the app these days. Everybody needs to rely on digital these days, whether they want it or not. I mean, in the old days, you know, there's still a choice. Now with COVID and everything, I hate to say, we have to trust the app. We're doing everything online. Why would you use a piece of software that's not trustworthy? So security is no longer an insurance play, which is, you know, something bad happens, then I can secure it. When nothing bad happens, I forget it. Security is a pillar now, which is it's building out trusted solutions. So I have a roadmap how to actually take us there. The roadmap is much more than having a bigger security practice, blah, blah. I truly believe that EPAM, I think, how are we going to win going forward, comparing to all the other guys out there building software? As a great software company, I think we're truly going to win if we can step to the plate and start building out what I call trusted services, which is build software, but also build software that could be trusted by their client, by their employees. To do that, I have a number of areas I need to expand in. I need to expand in MDRS because security is not just about fire and forget, as I mentioned before. You have to have a muscle. You built the muscle so that your machine would run consistently. I also need certain locations. There's certain research location that's really important, and I could tell you what those are. On a high-level research location, Midwest in the United States, a very good security research location. Vancouver area in Canada, Israel is a very good location, and so on. Those are all amazing locations with research and talent that is attached to existing security density pool. White Hat was a critical find for us, and I'm super excited. I'll bring the guys over and have them talk to you directly about it. But security also is a very, it's about attitude and culture, which is you think about things defensively. I walk around a corner, I always check it. It's me. That's how I live. Security is much more around thinking about what other people could do to their piece of code. So instead of just writing your code, you're thinking about, well, I exposed a byte. Somebody could actually use that byte for something else. What should I do? It's thinking defensively. It's always thinking from outside in. All those things together. And White Hat, it's an interesting company. They're specialized in a number of areas. So to answer your question, high level, is capability, location, and a really good set of talent pool. The location part, it's exciting. The existing offering they have is something that I wanted to build. And because they have it already, it accelerates my roadmap substantially. So it's making us move a lot faster.
Cool.
And I could tell I'm using up all your time.
Yep. So there's a slide with folks that are core team in our security practice. So feel free to contact them, right? We'll share this deck with you guys. And now questions. I guess we have a set of questions in chat. Have you replied something? Let me try to
Let me start from, there was a top question by
question from Andre.
Please guess when I stop entering password and you would my finger to log in to EPAM internal systems and even more clients internal system. I'm not too sure I understand the question. I apologize. Maybe if you can rephrase it for me, I'll be happy to take a look at it. But if it's about internal system, that's a different discussion. We could talk about that separately. And then Constantine, isn't that insecure to have second factor on laptop where you type in your password? Okay, different debate on two-factor or AFMA. We should talk about that separately.
And there was question. There was question from Constantine regarding a position that required Java bytecode experience. So I guess he's interested. So feel free to contact him.
I just texted him.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And so there was an example of some exploit. Then a question from Anthony. Can you spell out here the CPU attack you referred to? Do you see the question? I just highlighted it on the screen that I share.
Oh, this one. Okay. Can you spell out the CPU? I did. I replied back.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why it doesn't show up.
Ah, yeah,
I see. Yeah, underneath
The question from Jerry, how do you see EPAM positioning on the market with our functional development containing security IT part of cyber program compared with trends of companies covering establishing combined resilience programs, for example, cyber and continuity, cyber and privacy? And final one, what is your time prediction quantum computer will break 2048 key with a couple of hours?
So I'll take the second one first. So I'll the post-quantum one first. Everybody's smile when they talk about post-quantum. I'll pick that one first. So just so that everyone understands, a lot of people talk about quantum computing. So post-quantum has nothing to do with quantum computing, by the way. Post-quantum cryptography is really about not using, there's a tech term that we use called extremely difficult mathematical problem. I'm not kidding, it sounds like a joke, but that's actually the technical term for it, which is all cryptography relies on a limitation on, I mentioned this before, on CPU power. That's what all cryptography relies on. It generates, anyway, so you can look it up. It's not something we could describe here, would be interesting here. But if you look at that, that means if you can break the barrier of a linear level of growth of CPU power, you have a problem. Your typical type of, obviously your DES and AES type of encryption or your elliptical type of encryption, they all starts to become endangered. So in a sense that, you know, they won't be completely gone, but they become much more breakable. And so a lot of the, I can't make a prediction on quantum computing. In fact, I'm not even interested in quantum computing in a sense of when it's gonna come out. I love the idea. I'm not even interested in that. What I'm more interested in though, to be honest with you, is when are we gonna move towards a model that's less relying on the linear path or linear growth of CPU power. That's what I'm more interested in. And because that affects all the work that we do for integrity, confidentiality. And I always say that is easier to have confidentiality plus integrity, is still okay to have confidentiality by itself. It's very difficult to have only integrity with no confidentiality. It makes it a very, very complex problem. If you look at it from that aspect of it, that's a new world that we live in. And that's why post-quantum is interesting. Now, according to information I got at least, there are up to 5% of people actually deploying lattice type cryptography. So if that's true, lattice is basically one technique for post-quantum. If that's true, then the market is coming. Whether it's successful or not, it's still out to be seen. I think within the next 5 years, we would see a lot more of it. I don't think it would take over, especially on all the existing cryptography, you know, scheme that we have by any stretch within the next 5 years. But I think you would start to see it. And when the new method starts to come out, I think you would see immutable type of transaction become even more useful once we actually get to that level. But on the first one, it's much more of a strategic question. I love what you're asking. I think the reason why I structured a whole cybersecurity group around offensive, defensive, and governance is because I believe there's no such thing as defense only, offense only, or governance only. I believe all three has to be there. Philosophically, I strongly believe that. So this is why I'm structuring our go-to-market that way. And I think that's exactly why I see that every cloud engagement should have security as part of it. Every engagement we do with customers should have all three aspects of security as part of it, so that we can help our customer. At the end of the day, it's about the goal to build trusted applications and solutions. So anyway, but that's a much longer question though. I would love to come back to it at some point, maybe in the next session. Any other question that I could cover before we're using up too much time? I apologize.
If you need to go, we can finally stop the session. There are two questions. One is about, don't you think that, do you see the increase of security is in something that increase complexity and make things more fragile? So I guess the question is about extending this the attack surface finally, no?
Yeah, can I you mind if I show one slide? Is that okay? I know we're running out of time, I just show one slide and I'll show it very, very quickly and you will see what I mean. You guys can see my slide.
Yeah.
See my screen.
Yeah. Here it is.
I told you about this data, the drug trafficking data. So talking about vulnerability and complexity, yes, that is the big part of the problem. So on a chart on the right-hand side, from the zero to the all the way up, that's the number of CVEs, common vulnerability disclosed, from just public software. So it's going up for sure exponentially. At least that's the trend. You see like spikes of it going up and down and so on, because that's how it works. We discover things on spikes. On the left-hand side, those are groups of vulnerabilities. So for example, CVEs related to code coverage, related to encapsulation, related to security features and so on. Those are the trends across the years of CVEs on those grouping. If you look at the grouping, you're absolutely right. The complexity is what's killing us, right? Complexity and entropy is both a friend of the good guys and a friend of the bad guys. Entropy makes it very hard for the bad guys to build bore attack, a build once, run everywhere attack. Entropy makes it very hard for us to understand who's bad and who's not. So it makes detection and recovery much more complicated. It also, on the other side, makes, so it's a double-edged sword. Now, if you look at the different groups, the one that I highlight, though, all of them, the major one that's consistently going up, which is the code quality, the encapsulation part, the credential management, cryptography issues, and all the privilege and permission escalation, all of those are related to application development. So, and again, I'm not trying to pinpoint it again on all of us, but all of these are related to how we write software. So how we build software is making the world much more complicated and has a big part of it. These are all things that everybody should do. We should all identify and classify the information properly. We should all understand what the business impact is. We should all secure the design. We should all automate as much as possible using open source scanners and static analysis. We should always use need to only, which is start with least privilege, always use a framework. And start with, you know, what would a hacker do type of mentality. Those are all I believe in, my advice for everybody and, you know, for security. And so, and practical steps, not BS, right? So, but it's a very good question. It's the complexity is exactly where it's at, and the scale. That's where the problem's at. I think we're over time, right, Dima? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we have two final questions. You can just probably spend like 1 minute replying everyone, and that's it. The question, the first one is about, does it make sense to use UK as potential R&D and delivery location? Do you think it makes sense? Do you see some reasoning for this?
Does it make sense to use your keys? I'm sorry, where is that question?
It's the second from the end, from Leonid. Regarding UK, which probably
what do you location. Think about UK as a potential R&D delivery? I think UK would be a great location. I could say that right now, because I think UK and Europe across the board has a huge set of requirements around. Excuse me for a second. I think the next meeting is calling me. It has a huge set of requirements around how they see security, how they see privacy. I think for that reason, sorry, hold on. Let me just tell the team that I need a little bit more time. Sorry.
So we can finalize it if you need to go. Really, you can just reply these couple of questions in chat and that's it when you have time.
Sure. Well, I'll just cover it real quick. So UK is a great location, especially government, you know, expanding, as you pointed out. I think we definitely should have an approach to it. And it's a very, very different approach from North America and APAC. That's why I think a local region type of capability is important. So yes, I am interested. The second question, what tools do we use to automate DevSecOps to catch early of these vulnerabilities, Ethan? Well, we use different types of SaaS tools. We have a whole number of set of SaaS tools that we use, anywhere from, from Coverity, PT to AppScan for our internal projects. The Rosenauer team has a set of security constraints that I could maybe come back and ask him to present it, but he's got a whole program around our internal projects health check that includes static analysis and so on. But I apologize, we're running short on time, Dima. So yeah. Maybe we can continue in a conversation. Sure. Maybe we can even do an AMA next time and ask me anything next time.
Yeah, let's discuss it separately. Probably we will find some sure. additional topics. So thank you so much. It was really interesting. Oh,
thank you.
That's it. See
thank
you.
Thank you. Always good to
thank
talk
you
to
guys.
You, man. All right.
See you. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.